Blog Talk Radio.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught, Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings! And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Bye, Godders. Bye, Godders. Welcome to the live episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. The phone lines are open. You can call the show at 917-932-1765 to share your opinion. You can also tweet at Smoking Musket with your questions. Recording from outside the heart of college football, I am Bart Keeler, here to take your calls, answer your questions, and break down the WVU-Kansas game from Saturday. Appreciate you all joining us here on blogtalkradio.com. If you are listening live, well, as I mentioned, you can call us at 917-932-1765. If you're listening and you want to be involved, but you don't really want to call in, that's fine. I understand. But you can tweet your questions to us at Smoking Musket. Again, just however way you want to get involved, we'd love to hear your opinions. We also have a bye week coming up. Obviously, this week is a bye week for the Mountaineer football team. So if you want to share your opinions or thoughts about the WVU football program so far this season, the 3-1 Mountaineers, that is, you can share those thoughts again. 917-932-1765 is the phone number to call, or tweet at Smoking Musket. Well, the Mountaineers did open up conference play with a win, but if you had all had flashbacks to 2013, you or I were in the same boat on Saturday. In the first game of Big 12 play this season, WVU did not start out well. Let's just be quite honest about that. The first and third quarters were not great. But, you know, we prevailed eventually, I guess is the way you could say that. The Mountaineer offense was able to gain momentum, and really they were able to set a pace that Kansas wasn't able to keep up with. The defense looked at times porous, but when it mattered most, they came up and sealed the game out very well. I understand that there are some issues, and we will talk about that. But ultimately, West Virginia opens up conference play with a 56-34 victory on the road against a more talented than last year Kansas team. WVU is now 3-1 on the season, 1-0 in the conference. These are the things that matter. I think the biggest takeaway that I had from this game is just that our defense isn't quite there yet as a group. And I think it starts up front. That's been the biggest problem that I think this team has had all season. It is the run defense. I mean, look, people have been able to run on us very well. And I talked about it last week while also defending the 3-3-5 defense. But it is predicated on an active and physical defensive line. And quite honestly, we didn't have that much this past week. The defensive line was not getting the job done up front, and it showed. I mean, Kansas came away with, 390-some yards of rushing, which I heard on the ESPN broadcast was the best offensive rushing performance this season. And that's, that's not good if you are the Mountaineer defense. You don't want that. You want to be able to set a better tone and a better example, if you will. 367 total yards, for Kansas on the day. But it wasn't all that bad for West Virginia. I mean, look, we had 288 yards rushing ourselves, and Will Grier was able to toss a couple touchdowns with 347 yards passing in his own game. And we'll talk about Grier a little bit as well. I don't think Will Grier was all that great this game. He was a little off of his game. Oh, man, this is great. I don't know how to say this name because I don't think it's a real name, but at Bitter White Guy tweeted, is it basketball season yet? Not yet, but we do have schedule information that I actually will be putting out, probably after this podcast ends. I'll get it done tonight. Break down the schedule TV and time release that WVU came out with today. You could also go to the WVU Sports website and see that, but you can go to www.smokingmusket.com and you can see some commentary on that because I will give you some answers to that. But yeah, I know it's still football season. We got a couple more weeks until basketball season really starts, about a month and a half, really. But speaking of basketball season, I mean, look, we played Kansas, and Kansas is not a great football team. They are a basketball school, and it was evident. I mean, look, they were – I don't know what the official attendance was. Let me look that up real quick because that was kind of funny. The attendance was just not great on Saturday in Lawrence. Not that it ever, you know, is, but it was really – if you're a college football player and you have to play in front of a team that has literally no fans in the stands, it's got to be hard. I mean, I can tell you just from my experience at a D2 level, the amount that having friends, family, and fans at our soccer games helped us. And that was, you know, at best 100 people a night. It makes a difference. It's hard. I'm sure it's hard to play in a stadium that has zero energy whatsoever. But let's recap a little bit of what happened on the game. Again, you can call into the show, 917-932-1765. I'm Bart Keeler here, recording live for this Blog Talk Radio, on this Blog Talk Radio platform. This is the Smoking Musket Podcast, breaking down the WVU-Kansas game. So let's get into actually, you know, kind of breaking down what happened in this game. And it didn't start off well for West Virginia whatsoever. Sure, the defense came away surrendering only a field goal on the Kansas's first drive, but man, the first drive Kansas looked very good and they ran the ball incredibly well. I think they had an 18 and a 21 yard run on that drive alone, which was set the pace really for the rest of the game. It was what Kansas was able to do. And when they didn't stick with the run game, it was very evident because they weren't able to, maintain drives. They weren't able to convert on, well, I don't want to say they weren't able to convert on third down, but the problem was is they started throwing the ball early in their drives in a down series, if you will, and that put them behind the chains, which means they had to keep throwing. This first drive, though, they ran the ball almost, I think Bender had two passes the first drive. West Virginia ends up coming with a field goal because Kansas on a third and short or fourth and short, I think they were going for it. I think it was like fourth and two. They were going to go for it inside the 10. Again, ended up getting a false start penalty. So luckily West Virginia comes away, luckily West Virginia holds Kansas to only 3 points. Then you think if you're a Mountaineer fan, that's fine. Defense did its job, ended up only surrendering a field goal. Offense is going to get the ball. That wasn't really how it worked. We had a really nice run by Crawford to open the game, and then it wasn't a three and out, but it was a four and out. You know, you punt the ball back to Kansas, a team who just drove the length of the field on you almost, and you know, had a chance to put the ball in the end zone. We were fortunate that after their second drive, we were not down by more. More good running, and you know, luckily we were able to defend the pass well. I think that was the key to this game is we got a couple of stops in the run game, which have forced Kansas into a passing situation, and they just weren't able to pass the ball as effectively against us as they were able to run the ball. 23,901 of the game, supposedly. There you go, Memorial Stadium in Lawrence. It was not a great performance by the Mountaineer defense, but luckily on our second drive of the game, offense decides that they're going to get clicking. The tempo was better. The precision from Greer and kind of the rhythm he got in was better. And West Virginia is able to score a touchdown. It was ultimately Kennedy McCoy who ran it in, but Justin Crawford was the main reason why we got down inside. Like the, I think we got to the seven when Crawford, or excuse me, when McCoy ran it in. And that was, yeah, 7-yard run. That was key. The run game for West Virginia was not as effective, obviously, as Kansas, but it was a key component to why West Virginia was able to hold off Kansas and score as many points as they did. It was, for all intents and purposes, at that point, it was okay. We were up 7-3. It's fine. We did our job. Offense did our job. You expect the defense to come out a little bit better, and they did. Again, they were able to defend the passing game really well. They showed that throughout the rest of the half. I don't think Kansas scored again until, under 5 minutes to go in the half, which is fine. They do end up – West Virginia ends up getting another touchdown this time. Justin Crawford runs in from 11 yards. I don't – someone respond to me if you're listening, but I don't think Justin Crawford was touched on his first touchdown run. I mean, he went 11 yards. I don't think anyone touched him whatsoever. And it was good. It was a very efficient drive for West Virginia. I think it was then West Virginia holds again Kansas to a punt. And we enter the second quarter with this 14-3 lead. We're kind of getting some rhythm on defense. Things are looking good. We end up getting a David Sills touchdown pass. And then we're up 28-3. We're sitting pretty. And at that point, for me personally, I was feeling very confident that this was going to be. Now, again, I think we told you this last week. Kansas is still good. I did not expect us to cover the spread in this game. I think we ended up doing that from the last spread I saw. It just kind of depends on who you looked at. It was either 22.5 or it was either 21.5. I saw as high as 23.5. A 22-point margin of victory. I'm covering it. I'm saying that we did not cover the spread. Or we did cover the spread, excuse me. But at this point, 28-3 with about 5 and change left in the half, I felt a lot better. The team looked better. The defense was getting stops. And I think, again, that's the key to this 3-3-5 defense. It's not always about keeping them to under 100 yards. It's about getting stops. And we did. We forced punts. We were able to maintain a good rhythm on offense. The tempo of play on offense was very good. And I think it took a while for us, Favidol, to get into a kind of a play calling mode, maybe. And maybe it was Greer. I don't know. Something about what we were trying to run on offense in the first quarter wasn't really computing. Whatever formula was going on, it wasn't all adding up. And eventually, we got a hold of it. And we take a 35 to the 13 lead into the half, thanks mostly in part to Mike Daniels' 25-yard pick six. It was a well-defended pass. Again, Peyton Bender, not a great day from him. Not a great day for the Kansas passing game. And a deflection goes straight up in the air. Mike Daniels, number 4, catches it, sprints to the end zone. And we're up 35 to 10. Kansas with 30. This is another thing that really bugged me, to be honest. But Kansas was then at 36 seconds, right? We scored very late on that pick six. 36 seconds ago, they're able to go 5 plays, 49 yards, and get a 41-yard field goal to end the half. That was annoying because defensively, you just came up with this really big pick six. You have a chance to close the door ultimately on this team. And I know it was only a field goal, but come on. If you're defensively trying to set the tone, you can really set the tone by saying, hey, we just picked you off, ran it back for a touchdown. We just scored on you on offense. And then you try to come back out for the second or to respond to that, and we can shut you down again. Would have been a great way to end the half for a defense that did not look good in the first half and honestly didn't look good for the rest of the game. So the second half or the first half ends 35-13 in favor of the Mountaineers. Now, at this point, I don't know if you're following along or if you, you know, what you thought, but, you know, it wasn't like it was the worst. We were sitting fine. It was fine. We weren't having a great time on offense. We weren't having a great time on defense, but eventually got well and we seemed okay. And I thought very confident that we'd come out in the second half and pick up where we weren't able to start off really. We weren't able to keep the momentum that our offense had going forward. And that second or that third quarter was really ugly. Really ugly. I was not happy about that. But we'll talk about that in a second. Just want to remind you, our phone lines are open. You can call the show at 917-932-1765. Share your opinion. You can also tweet at Smoking Musket with any questions you have. I'll be happy to answer them. Again, not just about Kansas specifically, but we do have a bye week coming up. So, you know, you've got some you got plenty of football talk that you could, you know, you can show your opinions on. But, yeah, I'd love to hear from you. This live podcast is for you guys. It's not for me to just sit here and tell you what I thought. It's about you guys being able to share your opinions, and I'd love for you to share those with us. I know you guys have them because I see you all in our Facebook comments and our Twitter mentions. So it would be really cool if you could call in and share those with me. So, yeah, it wasn't a great first half. And from what I remember seeing, Kansas looked like they came out to play. They came out and really, they weren't necessarily physical, but that's what it's going to look like. And the reason you're able to run so effectively on the team is because you win the battle up front. And they were doing that because they're doing a really good job of taking up a lot of our defensive linemen and any other blitzing, either be it a defensive back or our linebackers who are coming up to stop the run. The Kansas line, in my opinion, was doing a very good job of getting a hat on the hat and occupying a lot of players. At one point, I think we had seven guys coming on the blitz, and almost all of them were accounted for somehow by, you know, five or six Kansas linemen. That's really impressive, but what that is your defensive lineman not getting the job done. You can't allow a guy to double-team you, you can't allow one guy to take up two of you or one guy to be able to knock you off of your spot so quickly. You've got to be stronger up front, and that sounds like, you know, kind of coach speak or, lazy analysis, but that's what it comes down to. What it was, in my opinion, is that our defensive line were not prepared for the run game as well as they were for the pass game. It seemed like we were trying to pass rush too much. And I get with a 3-3-5, you've only got three down linemen. You've got, you know, that's the same 3-4, whatever formation you play, nickel sometimes, you know, depending on how you're playing, you're not able to get the push off the ball that you might with, you know, four down linemen. But we were bringing linebackers and defensive backs up to the line of scrimmage, and we weren't able to have any success. All right, we got a call here, 304-844. Thanks for calling in. 304-844, what do you have to say about this WVU Kansas game?
Well, I have plenty to say, guys. I have plenty.
I recognize this voice.
Yes, how's it going?
It's going well, Smitty. How are you?
Not too bad. I am using a hands-on device. Nothing but safety here for the boys at the Musket. How's it going, everybody? How's the show so far? I'm having a good time.
Great. I'm glad you appreciate me talking about a Kansas Jayhawk football team.
Well, yeah. I don't know, man. Like, it's hard for me to put too much stock into it. Like, I believe that this Kansas team has, like, improved. I mean, I don't think they're
100%, yeah.
The whole losing to CMU in Ohio thing isn't great, but, like, if you're – I don't, like, 100% get that scheduling. Like, if you're in a program that, like, is looking for wins, right? And so, I understand the scheduling is made, like, about somewhere between, like, 10 to 25 years in advance. Like,
sure. But, sure.
Like, but still, like, even saying that, like, if you're, like, they probably scheduled this, like, I don't know, whatever, they probably weren't super great. And so, even still, if you're a pop-up program, why are you scheduling that team? Like,
yeah,
this is the part of the schedule where you need to be paying, like, $500,000 to some, like, I don't know, random, like, community college team in Kansas that you should be recruiting from.
That's how Kansas State did.
Well,
Kansas State did that. Yeah, like, what are they playing? Central Kansas or whatever.
Like, be playing the Chippewas. They should not be playing. Like, they should be going away to Ohio. Like, everyone in the, in, like, I don't know. Like, terrible.
No,
call.
I agree.
Terrible.
I mean,
scheduling for them.
Well, and we scheduled ECU this year, which, again, it's fine. In my opinion, your scheduling should be, and I think the College Football Playoff Committee has kind of set this up too. You play a big name team, you play an out of conference Power 5 team, you play a cupcake FCS team, or whatever, just play an FCS team, and then you play maybe a lower level team too. But, like, I agree, you played one FCS team and you beat them pretty well. And then you play two decent MAC teams. Central Michigan, decent. I mean, they're pretty good in terms of being a talented football team. And Ohio is not the worst program that's ever existed. So,
sure.
I agree with you. Why are you scheduling two non-gimmies? They're not gimmies.
Right. I understand, like, probably talking Kansas football scheduling is not, like, the most interesting thing for WK.
Well,
but still,
but,
terrible job. But.
Yeah, no, it's not. But, I mean, come on. Even if you have a loss to, like, maybe you get scheduled by Michigan or Colorado or Utah, and you're like, oh, okay, like, I understand why you're playing them, and you lose, and no one's going to go, well, yeah. No, when you lose to Ohio and Central Michigan, people look at you as a bad team. And I think you're right. They're not a bad team. They're not a bad team. They're not good.
They've
got talent.
Like, I don't know. I mean, like, yes, it is absolutely, I don't know, not a great sign whenever you're giving up big plays to not only Kansas, but you're giving up big plays to Delaware State and ECU. That's not a good thing.
Right.
And that's something that, I don't know, that just shows that the defense isn't necessarily as deep as you'd like it to be. But I think we knew that going in, right? Like, that's not anything new.
I think we knew that this was going to be this was going to be a down year for our defense. We're still not giving up a whole lot of actual points. Is that the silver lining? I mean, yeah, we gave up 34 to Kansas, but considering that we gave up almost 400 yards of rushing and we only gave up 34, you know?
And I would also say, like, I guess it just shows discipline, like, or, well, lack thereof or whatever, but, I mean, it kind of felt like the team kind of checked out at that point. God, I know I did. I completely checked out whenever we got that 35 like point, and then we.
It was 35-10. And even coming out of the half, 35-13 up, you got to think, oh, okay, you can't coast through an entire half, but let's just go through the motions, let's do our job, and get through this game without any serious injury, which.
For sure.
You know.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I would say, like, there's probably some learning lessons there. Like, maybe this team will learn not to let up next time. I feel like we had this problem last year, and then next thing we know, we're still giving it to Texas Tech whenever we're up four touchdowns. Like, we were still giving to them in the second half.
Yeah.
So, hopefully there's some learning experience to be made there. The bye week, while 8 games in a row isn't fantastic for the rest of the season, we've gotten some injuries from that KU game that would not be great. I wish we weren't playing Gary Patterson. Like, both of us had bye weeks. I wish that wasn't a thing, but I guess.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how a couple of the injuries, like I think Long is supposed to be coming back.
Long should be back for the TCU game.
Right. Yeah, so, like, this might be well-timed. 3:30 isn't super great. Like, it's not a night game, but it's also not a noon game. Like, it would have been nice if it was a noon game in Dallas, but I guess.
I think 3:30 is a great game because I think you're going to have a lot of people watching it. I think it'll be good for our fans to finally not have to wake up at 9 a.m. to watch a football game or get ready for a football game, you know. That'll be good. I mean, look, this is what I want to ask you, though, too, because you see things from a slightly different perspective than I do. Why are our offense just seem to not be in rhythm at large portions in this game, specifically the first and third quarters? Or am I the only one who saw that? Did you see that? It was the first quarter we were just not – something wasn't clicking. And then the third quarter, it came up again.
I'm pretty sure Holgorsen even addressed that, too. And he said, I'd rather have the out of sync in the first and third defense than the second and fourth. I think he said that in the post game.
And I get that.
Which is true. But, I mean, obviously, optimally, you would not like to be out of sync at all. But,
right.
I don't know. I mean, it's still, it's a game four. I don't know, man. This almost goes back to the whole basketball thing. We'll go droughts without scoring. I think it's just
right.
I don't know. I'm still putting up a ton of points. I mean, they just
we scored 56. We did not score for the entire third quarter and still managed to score 56 points.
Yeah, it's interesting just because there's an argument you said about maybe that's just our coaches aren't addressing halftime adjustments as well as the other team. But the other side of the coin is that after a quarter of trying to figure it out, they do figure it out, and then we dominate the fourth quarter. So,
they're up 35-13, and we knew what Kansas was doing against us. They were running the ball, but they weren't doing anything really to stop us defensively. It was mostly us. So what adjustments do you want to make offensively? Hey, guys, throw the ball to the guy. Will Greer was off a little bit. Guys were dropping passes. Caron White. These were things that, a coaching adjustment isn't going to fix, you know? You can't fix Will Greer. Throw it in front of the receiver instead of behind him so the defender doesn't have a chance to make a play on the ball. That's not something you can change in game. You can't change Caron White catch pass. So maybe that was what it is. I don't know. We look good, though.
That's true. I mean, drops aren't anything new, again. I don't know. I feel special teams, drops, and the occasional sputtering of offense, I feel are not necessarily individual to just this season. This is something that we've been used to over the past 4 or 5 years, I suppose, right?
Well, I mean, shoot, forever. I mean, when's the last time we've had some solid special teams kickers, Pat McAfee. On the whole, it's college football.
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And
it was 10 years ago. So,
And even beforehand, it wasn't we had sensational. We've had great punters and kickers. We've also had times where, holy crap, can we just kick the ball out of bounds every time and give it to him on the 35? You know, I don't know if that's a Dana Holgorsen problem, but it has been a little more pronounced under his tenure. However, it comes down to recruiting. You can't necessarily coach a guy to kick a ball 50 yards.
Yep.
But
plus, a lot of the special team stuff, I guess, I don't know. It also has to go back with depth. I mean, four or five stars right now, and special teams just get on the field. But we're mostly just talking about, whenever you're talking about, kick lengths or something like that, you're talking about just, the kicker and the punter. I'm not sure exactly. It seems like everybody has a genius way of fixing it. I mean, across the country, everyone talks about just going
to
Australia, getting another bad wing, or just recruiting from the soccer team. And I feel like every soccer player in America, you included, probably feels oh, I could probably do that. But how many soccer players actually do
that? It's not that easy.
So
people think it is. It's not. I promise.
There you go.
That's what I'm saying. You can't coach a kid. Seriously though, it does come down to recruiting. That's not something that you can coach as a coach. You can't coach a kid to necessarily kick a ball farther. He either can when he gets there as an 18 year old, or he can't. There's a kid that my brother's high school just played. He kicked a 56 yard field goal, two 56 yard field goals in a game, and was kicking balls out of the end zone on kickoffs. That's one guy in Gwinnett County. No one else is doing that.
Yeah, 20-some high schoolers. Did you yourself give him an offer? I would like to formally invite you
to join the West Virginia University football team. I don't know if you've watched us, but we don't have a great kicker right now, and we could have one if you came. Thank you.
It's like some type of like citizen's arrest.
Right.
Where you're just like, you're giving yourself the jurisdiction to just be like, all right, like, I'm an alumni. Like, I donated to the school. I should be able to, like, at least, like, suggest some scholarships.
Right. I can recruit. Look, if Dana's listening, I can help recruit Georgia. I'm just saying.
Perfect.
I mean,
he wouldn't say no.
We've had some decent players from here. I think he would appreciate it.
I got to ask you this, too.
Yeah. Sorry, I got one more question for you. I'll probably have more, obviously. Was TCU's offense really good? Or is OK State's defense low-key not great?
I legitimately think that it's that TCU's offense was just clicking that day. I think the TCU defense was really good. I think both teams are really good.
I thought the defense was very good.
Yeah. I'm still kind of surprised that outcome happened, but I think it has more to do with, like, Gary Patterson than anything else. I feel like the strongest unit on that day was the TCU defense. Just because they were good against the Oklahoma State offense, and I feel like they won more than they lost. But what is not a great scenario is that it looked like TCU was able to run on them, and West Virginia did not look like they're able to stop the run.
We didn't do that well against VaTech. We didn't do it considerably well against Delaware State either. That was actually a sign of things that are true. Our defense isn't able to stop the run that well.
They had a legit, like, option type.
They shouldn't be able to put up that many yards against us. Granted, as I said earlier in the show, when you have three down linemen, if one of them or two of them aren't great, it's hard to really get a push up front. I got to say this. I don't think that we were necessarily – and this is not an indictment of Gibby, because I would have done the same thing. We weren't prepared to, like, line up and just stop the run. Because Kansas hadn't proved that they were, able to do that, or two, willing to run the ball all that often. They were a very pass-heavy team coming into this. And Peyton Bender is kind of a good quarterback. He's not great, but he's, a decent quarterback. So I think they're probably more emphasis, and in their minds they're thinking, I need to get to the quarterback more. So that's not something you can necessarily do at the snap of the ball. All the coaches yell pass, but when you're already in pass rush, you can't then go, let me stuff the run. I don't know. That's just kind of how I thought about it, but I could be
– I hear what you're saying. Like, I would say
wishful.
I don't feel too super great about West Virginia being able to go into DFW and win, but if that is going to happen, I feel like Kenny Trill, the bad one, is going to need to show up. Someone on the West Virginia side is going to need to start picking balls. Like, how many interceptions do we have on the year? I feel like I might remember two or three.
I think we might need a
multiple interception day from Kenny Hill, which I don't know if that's
possible.
Yeah, that'd be
nice. He's done it before.
We can't have people drop balls.
No. Well, I think that was a big – if you're going to play against TCU's defense, you need a good run game. Because I don't think Oklahoma State's run game is as – it's fine, but we all know that their pass game is where it's at for them. But I don't think their run game is as strong as ours, personally. And I predicate that on saying that we've had Justin Crawford has ran for 100 yards in four straight games. So clearly we're doing something right. We've got to have a strong run game, but we've got to, on defense, be able to turn the ball over, because TCU's offense was not super great, but they're not going to make – they're not going to – if you don't do anything to make them mess up, they're going to be – they're going to look really good. And that's what Oklahoma State's – I mean, Oklahoma State was not able to do anything to really stop them because they weren't – that's just – they weren't stopping them at all. I don't know. I don't know. I can't tell you why. They just weren't.
Can't disagree with that.
Anything else you got to say? I mean, look, we're four games into the season now. How do you feel?
I kind of feel like we're right where I figured we'd be. I didn't necessarily think we were going to win against Virginia Tech. So, I mean, I know that's easy to say now. And I'm much more, like, credible saying that if I have been on the podcast more. Apologize for that. But
you said it. I heard you.
That's true. 3-1. Not bad. This stretch is going to be interesting. We need to beat Texas Tech at home. That needs to be a thing. I don't necessarily think we need to beat TCU away, but if we lose to Texas Tech at home, that's not a great sign for things to come. So, especially if we lose to TCU away, we need that win. So, we'll see. I'm intrigued to see what happens. I'm intrigued to see if Kingsbury, like, what's the deal with him? Do we know? Like, is he cool now? Like, he could put
this is legit.
Right?
Yeah, like, we need to talk to our friend Hunter Cook, who covers football in a variety of capacities. Cliff Kingsbury's team has kind of put it together. Kind of. Not, like, entirely, but, like, they haven't played anyone that makes you go, wow, they beat so-and-so. But they have won games in fashions that at least make you go, oh, okay. I mean, they beat Houston 27-24. Clearly some defense was needed in that game. So,
that's true. I'm actually texting Hunter right now. If he gets back to me within the next 20 seconds, I'll have more to say. But, yeah, I don't know. Like a season overview, I would say Texas Tech is a very big deal. And it's very hard to say what the rest of the league kind of feels like just because I feel like Texas, just knowing Texas, I know, the whole new coach, they might have a whole different personality, blah, 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 whatever. But it's too soon to kind of, predict, the Texas-Baylor-Iowa State games. Who the hell knows what Baylor's going to be by the end of the year? Who knows what Iowa State's going to be at that point? But I would say that Texas Tech game is crucial if West Virginia is going to have a decent year. I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm not hopeful for 10 wins. That's not a thing that I'm really thinking that's going to happen.
I don't think I thought 10 wins were realistic last year. It's just we were consistently the same team the whole year for the most part, and other teams weren't. So I don't know if that's the same case. Like, I don't think we've been consistently the same team this entire season. We've had within games inconsistencies.
That's true.
You know? So, I mean, I still think, look, 100%, 8 wins to 9 wins is still on the table. We have 3. We need 6 more wins to get to 9 wins. Are there 6 wins on the schedule? I think so. Are they out there? It is a lot. I'm not arguing, but they're out there. I don't know where we get them necessarily because there are probably 3 to 4 losses on the schedule too. You mentioned at TCU. We also have to go to Oklahoma. And luckily we get Texas and Oklahoma State at home. I guess that's good. We have to go to Kansas State. Our 2 least successful teams against, we have to go on the road to play them. We haven't beat Oklahoma. We've only beaten Kansas State once. We got to play them both in their house.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole last year 10 wins thing, like, it's kind of like a hollow 10 wins a little bit just because I just felt like the conference was really down and we had an incredibly terrible schedule. So, like, I don't know if we win against TCU. Well, we probably win against TCU if it was away last year. I don't think we win against K-State if it's away. And so, the way that kind of thing, the way those fall, I don't know, this schedule is a lot tougher than I would really like it to be, but I don't know. if we get seven, I'll be pretty happy just because, I mean, like, what's the eligibility on Greer? I know I should know this off the top of my head.
He's still got another year left after this if he wants it.
I think if we are able to get a lot of people on defense, a ton of experience, and get, like, kind of like a good bit of catches under the receivers that need them. And, like, I mean, if Petaway looks legit after this year, I feel like 2018 is going to be the, like, possible title contention run.
And I think we've all said that. Now, I mean, look, I'm with you. I will say this. 9 wins is out there. It's still possible. I don't think 10 is out there just because that's a lot of games to win. But 9 games is still out there. 8 wins, still out there. 7 wins, I would not be unhappy. This conference is better. TCU is better. Yeah. Texas Tech has shown to be better. Oklahoma's still very good. Oklahoma State is probably better than they were last year, still even after this TCU game. I think that was a bad game for them. I still think they're very good. Mason Rudolph is, for me, the best quarterback in the conference. Kansas State is presumably better. You know, it's hard to tell what each team is going to be when we play them. Luckily, our October is not as terrible as it has been in the past.
That's another thing. Our death October is not the death October that it usually is.
No.
I would have loved to have the schedule last year. Everything, like the way that it's structured. Does that make sense?
Our October is at TCU, Texas Tech at home, at Baylor, Oklahoma State at home. There could be 3 wins in that month. There could be 2, but there could be 3 because, you know, who knows? But, like, we've had Octobers before where it was like, wow, we made it out of that. Our November, to me, is harder.
By the way, I know they're 0-4, but they looked a lot better against Oklahoma. Now, being 0-4 and with everything that they've had go down, I mean, like, it'd be very easy for Baylor to go ahead and quit. But I don't know Matt Rhule as a letting his team quit guy.
No.
Luckily, I kind of feel like, I don't know if it's better or worse that we're playing them sooner than later, because I feel like towards the end of the year, they just try to play spoiler against everybody. This year, like early in the year, they aren't necessarily just trying to ruin everyone's day. But I don't know quite yet about that game. Honestly, I feel like if we win the Texas Tech game, we win the Baylor game. But if we lose the Texas Tech game, we're gonna like carry that loss in the Baylor. You know what I mean?
We can't have multiple losses in a row. That's gonna be that biggest thing. I mean, luckily we get Texas Tech. TCU away is gonna be tough. It's gonna be real tough. No doubt about that. Texas Tech at home is gonna be a better rebound game, if you will. But it's going to be tough. Anything else you have about this wonderful Mountaineer team that we have at 3-1 in the 2017 season?
That's all I got. Hunter did not text me back. I did everything I could to prolong that. That was a professional move by me.
I'm proud of you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I have the chemistry.
Absolutely. It's hard to talk by yourself for an hour, by the way.
Colin Cowherd, you're insane. I do not know how you're doing this.
I don't know either. Luckily, last week, a lot of people tweeted in. If you have questions, you can tweet them in at Smoking Musket. Thanks, David, for calling in. I appreciate your presence very much. If you want to be like David and call in, call 917-932-1765. Any parting shots you want to share with us?
Nope, not really. Have a hell of a show, and bye, buddy. Hope you find it good.
There he is. Thanks, Smitty.
See ya.
That was David Smith calling in, a great friend and friend of mine, a friend of the show, obviously. He was a co-host with me and co-host before that. And he wanted to call in, share his thoughts. You can do the same thing. It's 917-932-1765. Again, 917-932-1765. Call in. Love to take your opinion. We got about 15 minutes left here. So I left you with a little bit of a breakdown when we got to the second half. And that's where things got real interesting because, like I said, West Virginia did not score on that second half. We had a 35-13 lead at halftime, and all of a sudden Kansas scores 14. And they weren't like, again, they weren't beating us defensively. We were making a lot of mistakes. We were dropping balls. We were missing passes. Those things really stunted our ability to gain momentum. I think what I'm catching on to this offense is it's a momentum offense. It takes a while to get up to it. And when it gets going, it can be really fun to watch. Look at that second quarter of the game. You know, it took us a couple possessions to get in, but once we did, it was nice to watch. That third quarter was very scary. Kansas comes back, gets two touchdowns. All of a sudden, they are within, 8 points? Sorry, I had to do math there for a second. So at the end of the third quarter, West Virginia looking at a 35-27 lead. Offensively, that's terrible. Absolutely terrible. At one point, I think we had punt, interception, punt as drive chart in the third quarter. It's not good at all. Luckily, our offense was able to really roll in the fourth quarter, and it took a while to get there. Finally, it did. And West Virginia was able to rattle off three touchdowns in the fourth quarter and hold Kansas to only 7. Luckily, West Virginia was able to come out with – I mean, really, it was a little bit lucky that we were able to cover this game. I'm saying we covered because the last line I saw was 29.5. So if we win by 22 points, it's a cover. I did not think that we were going to do that. We were a little lucky, too. Not that it makes any difference on the record, but, you know. But David Sills comes out with – for my opinion, he was the best player on the field for us on offense. Don't discredit Crawford or McCoy. But Sills, to me, was the best player in offense because he gave us that needed consistency in the passing game that was a little shaky there from time to time. David Sills gets a pass from Will Greer to open up the fourth quarter with a really nice, long 11-play, 86-yard drive. Then Kansas comes back and, I mean, look, Kansas offense at points, they're talented. Stevenson's junior, he's a really good wide receiver. Peyton Bender, a very decent quarterback. Khalil Herbert and Martin Taylor apparently found themselves this game or found the holes in our offense or in our defensive line, one of the two. And they made this game very interesting and very uncomfortable for our defense. I didn't think that we would score 56 on them. I did think we would get into the 40s, but I was not expecting them to get into the 30s, even with their offensive talent. They are a talented offensive team. But luckily, West Virginia was able to close out the game with some good defensive stop. Will Greer actually got 2 touchdowns on the ground today, which was pretty interesting. The last touchdown was great, though, because it came off of a strip sack fumble recovery from Lamont McDougal, which, again, that dude has impressed me. He is one of the more exciting defensive linemen to watch. And really, we didn't have any big plays on defense. Excuse me, no, that was the interception. I apologize. The fumble came earlier in the quarter. My fault. If I'm correct, yeah, I think it was. Yeah. That came on the first. No, it was. Okay, I'm right. See, I got to trust my notes. Take notes. I got to trust them. Anyway, the strip sack fumble that Lamont McDougal forced late, about 5 minutes to go in the game, sealed it for West Virginia. We get the fumble recovery down on Kansas's 30-ish yard line. 2 plays later, we score a touchdown. Yeah, it was funny. Like, I've had this experience a lot of times with some West Virginia teams where I go, okay, it's fine, just run the ball right off the clock. What do? We score real quickly. We scored in like under 30 seconds. But at that point, you take the points because I wouldn't have felt comfortable with only a field goal there. It would have only put us up, I think, that would have been 52-34, which would not have felt as comfortable as 56-34. And I know it's really weird, but that's kind of how I felt. Like, we needed to score a touchdown as well as milk the clock. And we did score a touchdown. on that fumble recovery. And then luckily, Kansas again, you know, Peyton Bitter throws an interception. West Virginia is able to run down basically the clock. We did go for it on fourth and I think two down at the goal line. We didn't get it, but that was the right call for me by Dana Holgorsen. Dana made the right call by going for it on fourth and goal at the two because, you can kick a field goal, but you would rather at least put the game away with a touchdown. You score a touchdown there. You get into the 60s. It looks a lot better. I'm totally fine with that. And really, if you go for it on the two, they've got 98 yards in three-ish minutes. About a minute and a half, sorry. And not this large comeback. But it was a no-lose situation, in my opinion. And I think he showed some his mentality of we're going to go for it, and he went for a touchdown, and it didn't work. That's fine. Maybe it was not the best play call, but I'm not mad at trying to go for it on fourth and goal at the two. So again, West Virginia comes away with a 56-34 win. The Mountaineers are 3-1. Kansas falls to 1-3. A few stats to throw at you before we get going. Let's see, we got about 9 minutes left. So stats here real quick. Will Greer, not the best day for him. 25 of 39, 347 yards, 2 touchdowns in the air. He also had, as I said, a couple on the ground. We had a total of 5 rushing touchdowns. So this was a very good rushing game by both teams. Will Greer, those 2 touchdowns were a little bit scrambled though. So, don't call those up to, design run plays like Skylar Howard used to do for us, but he showed his elusiveness and was able to get in the end zone. So good for Greer. Peyton Bender, 17 for 32. Good job by us too. I think this was more of our defensive back showing some very good cover skills because Bender had to throw balls away. He was missing. He wasn't able to find open receivers. 17 for 32, 197 yards, a touchdown interception for the junior transfer. Not his best day. Decent day from our defensive backs. Running the ball wise, we had 2 guys, and I said I needed this. 2 guys go over 100 yards. Justin Crawford, 18 carries, 125 yards, a touchdown. Kennedy McCoy with 2 touchdowns on 12 carries, goes for 105 yards, his first plus 100-yard performance of the season. Crawford's fourth. He's 4 for 4 going over 100 yards this season. And I don't know where this stat came from because I don't know. I didn't fact-check this that well, and I believe it's not right. But apparently West Virginia, when Justin Crawford goes – let's see. When Justin Crawford goes over 100 yards – West Virginia is 7-1 when Crawford is over 100 yards rushing. So I don't know if that is correct. I seem to remember us losing to Oklahoma last year when he had over 100 yards, and I know we lost to Virginia Tech, and I'm pretty sure he went over 100 that game, unless I'm completely missing it. But I thought we did. So maybe, I don't know if that stat's right or not, but I found it interesting nonetheless. The two backs for Kansas were good, but Khalil Herbert, 36 carries, which again, I don't know if we were prepared for that. Definitely weren't prepared to see them run the ball 36 times, 291 yards, 2 touchdowns, a great performance by that young man. Just hats off to him. He had a great day. We didn't look good at all, but he took advantage of it. And in the passing category, in the receiving category, David Sills with 8 catches, 130 yards, and the only 2 touchdowns that we scored for the year went to David Sills. Gary Jennings with a very steady, reliable 6 for 75. Marcus Sims, 4 for 68. And Karan White with a couple drops, but 3 catches, 36 yards. I also want to point out, I mentioned the Lamont McDougal strip sack, fumble recovery mentioned. Let's see, Mike Daniels, his pick 6 that, it fell right to him, and he took advantage of it. But Rashid Benton with 12 total tackles and an interception. Pretty good day for that young man as well. A few things before we head out, though, before we get into the Big 12 roundup. Mike Daniels, Kazir White, and Brendan Ferns all picked up injuries. Daniels and White seem to be less of a issue, according to Dana Holgorsen, but Brandon Ferns is out with a separated shoulder. We don't know the timetable for that, but it could be a season-long injury. Hopefully not for that young man, and especially for our depth at the linebacker position. But Brendan Ferentz out for the foreseeable future. We don't know how long Mike Daniels and Kaiser White will be out, but they did exit. Kaiser White and Daniels exited the game with injuries. So things to look at there, keep an eye on in the coming weeks. Obviously, with this bye week, there's no reason to practice them or anything. So I don't know if we'll have any real updates. Let's hit the Big 12 roundup real quick. We mentioned a couple of the other games, but we'll talk about these. And I'll give you a few of my takes. OU 49, Baylor 41, down in Waco. Not a great showing for Oklahoma. You know, they've kind of rolled in their first what, three games now. But they go to a 4-0, even though they didn't play well. They just let Baylor hang around. They're up like 21-0 after the first quarter or something like that. They had a sizable lead after the first quarter, and Baylor just hung around. I don't know what the Baylor team's mentality is. I don't know what they're made of. I don't know what they are going to be this season, but they showed a lot of good fight. And, you know, for the first time, their offense looks capable. Texas Tech 27, Houston 24. On the road, Texas Tech gets a win. Not a high-scoring affair. They're 3-0. Texas Tech is 3-0. They have to now be considered a legitimate, not contender, but a legitimate team in the Big 12. I mean, their defense hasn't looked great, but they've done enough to let their team win three games. And then the final big game, obviously the TCU-Oklahoma State game. I did not expect this. TCU's defense looked really good. Oklahoma State still managed 31 points, but TCU looked in control of this game from the get-go, and Oklahoma State never had a prayer. So TCU gets a 13-point win in Stillwater. Oklahoma State's defense did not look great because I don't think TCU's offense is that good. But they were able to do a lot against Oklahoma State, specifically run the ball, which is very concerning if you're a Mountaineer fan. And we got to look at these, you know, this team coming up on what, October 7th is what it is. So that game is announced for a two headlines, I guess, coming out this week. The West Virginia TCU game has been announced as a 3:30 kick. So that'll be nice to not have to wake up real early and watch football again. And then West Virginia is back in the top 25. We landed at number 23 in both the coaches and AP poll. So I didn't think we would get back to the top 25, honestly, until we would beat TCU. But that's pretty good. I will take that all day. You know, it's how long it'll last. We might not make it out of the bye week still ranked because, you know, only Florida State and Miami can do that apparently. But nonetheless, we're back to the top 25, and that's pretty cool. So we'll take it. Let's see. I think that's all we have to talk about right now. You know, I appreciate David calling in. Again, we do this every Monday to recap the game. We obviously won't do it next Monday because we don't have a game. So we'll only have the one podcast next week, but, you know, we'll still put out another podcast this week. But as I said, every Monday after the game, you can call 917-932-1765 and join the show. You can also tweet at Smoking Musket for all your questions, and we'll try to answer them. You can do that anyway. If you have, like, a specific question you want us to answer on the podcast, you can ask that, especially in our preview podcast. We'll still answer them. It won't be live, but you can still tweet them at us. Mike and I will answer them. He'll be back on when we record later this week, and you'll hear us on the pre-recorded podcast on Friday. So as we look ahead to the bye week, Mountaineers are 3-1 on the season, coming 3-1 on the season, 1-0 as they enter the Big 12 conference play with a win over Kansas 56-34. I know it's only a bye week, but, you know, we're going to have some good content on our show that will come out on Friday. So please listen to that. We're going to have some special guests. But as for now, thanks for listening to this live episode of the Smoking Musket podcast. I am Bart Keeler. And again, I think Mike will join me back on Friday. So look for our podcast to come out on Friday. And you can always follow us at www.smokingmusket.com for daily news, notes, and opinions on WVU sports. So By Goddard, thank you for listening to me talk on the Smoky Muskin podcast. And as always, goodbye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.